You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
Rolling on with the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle. We'll talk to Ray Roberts, former left tackle, Seahawks pre- and post-game show host at 8:30 this morning, because he, I know, has a strong feeling about the Seahawks running game and Pete's recommitment to it that he told us about yesterday. So stick around for that. Then Jake Heaps may give us the other side of that at 9 o'clock. But before we do any of that, I mentioned that we were going to have one of my favorite people on. And you may not know Tom Tangney. Certainly you do if you listen to the Tom and Curley Show on our sister station, 97.3 Cairo FM, every afternoon at 3 o'clock. Tom has been a staple on Seattle radio for certainly a whole lot longer than I've lived here in Seattle. And he is truly, and I do mean this, Tom, one of my favorite people. I miss seeing you every day. It's been one of the, like, minor, like, lousy things about COVID is that I don't get to talk to you before the show every morning anymore.
What do you mean minor?
Major. I mean, I guess compared to, like, people losing their life and jobs and things like that, it doesn't quite, But you used to really help me be in a good mood every morning. I would come talk to you for 5 minutes or so before the show and just put me in a good mood.
Yeah, that was one of the highlights. That was when our show was on from 9 to noon, and so I was there early enough to see you guys march on to your show early in the morning, although that was at 7. Now I hear your show starts at 6.
It's really terrible. It's so terrible, Tom. Let me tell you how awful my life is now. Don't do this. Retire as soon as you can, because you don't want to wake up this early. Can you – there's so many reasons I just love talking to you, and we'll do some Seahawks and maybe even some Kraken stuff here, but – we did talk a little bit about Nick Rolovich this morning and the mandate, et cetera. Can you help us just understand the state mandate, how it came about, and how he gets caught up into it?
Wow, that's pretty newsy. Well, one of the things is that early on, a year and a half ago, 18 months ago, no one thought we'd need a mandate. The demand for a vaccine always felt like it was going to be nearly 100% when we didn't have the vaccine. It's like, oh my God, if we can only hold on until the vaccine is here, then surely that'll solve all our problems. And that's why I think that we all thought this thing would be behind us once January hit and people started getting the vaccine. When the Delta variant came along and we realized that now what we were dealing with COVID-19 was much more transmissible than it was before Delta variant came along, we realized, holy smokes, this isn't going to work as easily and as well. There became an anti-vaccine movement. So anti-vaxxers have always been with us on the left and on the right. But there, for some reason, there's this volatile mix of politics involved, sort of an anti-government politics involved in the anti-vax movement around COVID-19 that has now expanded to such a degree that a lot of people were not getting it. At that point, that's when the governor, in this very controversial decision, especially if you don't like the vaccine or don't want to take the vaccine or have an sort of an anti-government attitude, don't tell me what to do. You know, this is not, you're not my dad, you're not my boss kind of attitude toward government. When the mandate came down, a lot of people that sort of, you know, sort of ensured that they were going to fight it. The mandate happened from the state because the state realized we were not getting enough people vaccinated.
But it's only state employees, right? I mean, so essentially it is their boss.
It's state. Well, yeah, that's true. But it's also, and this is where it really expands out, not so much in the case of Nick Rolovich, but also anybody who contracts with the state. So that's a lot of people. And then individually, there are individual cities and counties that can, that with that as sort of the cover, that becomes their mandate. Now, as Nick Rolovich, as the highest paid, how the Cougar coach gets paid more than the Husky coach makes no sense
to
me.
Well, this year so far, he's deserved it, but that's a side note.
Yes. Exactly. In fact, I can't stand conspiracy theories, but I can imagine if I'm a Cougar fan, and I'm not, I'm a Husky fan. If I was a Cougar fan, I could see this conspiracy theory revolving around the fact that former Husky Jay Inslee realized that the Cougars were better than the Huskies this year and so had to arrange this elaborate effort to get rid of the coach who's doing a much better job than poor Jimmy Lake and all this. I don't believe it, though. I'm just I want to put that out there. Understanding
You're just saying and then walking away from the bomb you just dropped. Yes, I get it.
Exactly.
All right, so, that's kind of where we're at now. All right, well, then Rolovich is now out.
That was a shock to me. You were the first one. You texted that news to me. I was really shocked. And the reason I was shocked is because the way Rolovich had been playing this, it was like, oh, I think things will work out. And then when word leaked out because of the former Hawaii coach leaking
June
it out
Jones.
That, yeah, June Jones, that he had asked for religious exemption. I said, okay, that's his out. Right now, the problem is we don't really know why he's out. We don't know if he requested a religious exemption and it was rejected. If he requested a religious exemption, it was accepted as a serious religious exemption, but they couldn't find a way to accommodate it because he's had so much interaction with players, or if it was just a political stance and he just made up this religious exemption. I don't know if he's, you know, very religious, you know, like Brock Huard. If Brock Huard told me he had a religious objection, I would believe him. You know, Brock's a very seriously religious guy. I don't know enough about Rolovich to know if this is just a plant or not. The one interesting piece of information that I got yesterday, maybe you guys on the sports side knew this, but Seattle Times included a paragraph that said that Rolovich followed a lot of individuals and groups that were preaching this sort of what I would consider anti-science, anti-vaccine stance, and that they were coaching people how to apply for a religious or medical exemption to get over this, this government cramming it down their throats. If that's true, it might have just been a political move. At that point, I don't feel sorry for Rolovich at all. If he's part of this kind of, you know, what I consider somewhat a nutty crowd, kind of like a stop the steal kind of crowd or something, like they don't let evidence interfere with their own prejudices or bias, then I am very unsympathetic. In fact, I'm a little irritated with him. If he really did this to the university, to all of his players, that he could have easily resolved this, but because of his political stance, I have a, you know, that right. that's
and you're saying
a
political
problem.
Stance as opposed to religious stances,
exactly, or medical. Believe me, I'm all in favor of those kinds of exemptions. I also, and even if it was a political thing, listen, I love civil disobedience. I'm a child of the 60s and early 70s, where, you know, people really fought for social good. Martin Luther King went to jail how many, you know, tens of times, if not hundreds of times, because he was intentionally breaking the law to bring attention to what he considered a wrong in this country. If that's what Rolovich is doing, bully for him. I'm proud of that. Good for him, because the key to civil disobedience is you take your punishment. I think this is wrong. I'm going to break the law, and I'm going to suffer my punishment to bring attention to this. If that's what Rolovich is doing, again, good for him. The problem is, and this is what irritates me most about him, he doesn't explain himself at all. Now, he doesn't owe an explanation. He was willing to walk away from a $3.5 million job, so maybe that's enough statement, but he never explained why he was objecting to it. If he had just been more transparent about why he was so, resistant to this state mandate, it would have been easier for us to understand, and that's what I wish he had done.
All right, Tom Tangney of Tom and Curly here on 710 ESPN Seattle. You can hear Tom afternoons, 3 o'clock on our sister station. What are you thinking about life after Russell Wilson right now for these, we've seen it for a game and a half and a few more
listen.
To come.
I'm a big sports fan, but I have the two biggest loves in my life is football. It's the Seahawks and the Huskies, and I've realized that they're the same team right now. I'm just going to start calling them the Sea Huskies, because now that we don't have Russell Wilson, we are a lot like the situation that we have with Dylan Morris as a Husky. We've got a suspect quarterback running an offense that sputters and a defense that can't stop the run. We both have 2-4 records. It's like this is as bad, an era of local football that I can remember. Things could turn around in both cases, but I've watched every second of, of all their games, and I'm as down as I could be. Right now, if I'm the Seahawks, I'm playing for the draft pick.
They don't have a draft pick.
No.
They already traded their draft pick for Jamal Adams.
Right. Oh, my God. Can we put... Maybe we can figure out a trade with Jamal Adams and get back that draft pick.
I don't know. Not after what he's... Not after hitting that ball hit him in the face the other day instead of him picking it off. So, no, I don't... I get what you're saying. I think that the Seahawks, ultimately, it's easier to turn around a football team, right? And you're going to get Russell Wilson back, and you know you can quickly get back to the top in football. The Huskies, I think, are in a potential for a really big long-term problem, because once perception from the 18-year-old kids turns against you, it takes a long time to turn it back.
Yeah, but we've got a Heward, and Hewards have saved our bacon so many times in the history of Husky football.
Me too.
That I'm thinking that Sam may save the day, but I don't care. I think this is going to be kind of a lost season. Maybe we can throw in Sam Heward at the end of the season and get a few reps under his belt. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, here's the thing that I think about losing Russell Wilson. I feel like even before Russell got hurt, This is a lost season. I thought we were not firing on all cylinders even with Russ. Without Russ, it's like we're just going to have to take an L for this season. Because the thing that I don't want, even if, let's say, we do win the next two games and we're 4-4 and then we go into the bye, that's not going to help us much, because how good are we going to be? We're going to be good enough to, maybe like we did a couple of years ago, go to Dallas to play a playoff game and get blown out. And it's like, I'm afraid we are at the end of the Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson era. Even if Russell stays here for another 2 or 3 years, I just feel like our window has closed, and we're never.
Well, there's not a lot of talent around them. I mean, I think that's kind of what you come back to.
Yes.
Well, I mean, is that because of Pete and Russ? Is that because of the drafting? I mean, there's a lot of good conversations. We talk about it every day right here on 710 ESPN.
Yeah, that's what I hear. It's just too dang early for me. Especially now that I have an afternoon show.
Yeah, please.
It's like getting up this early is.
Well, I can't listen to your show either. It's right in the middle of my nap time. So that's where
perfect.
I crawl myself into bed for
a
nap.
That's why we're still friends.
That's right. Now, are you, Tom Tangney, are you watching the Kraken?
I don't know that much about hockey, but I taped the first game because I think I had a movie screening I had to go see or something. But I watched every single second and listened to all the commentary, their very first game. I loved it. You know, we were down 3-0, I guess it was, and then we came back and tied it up, and it was exciting as hell. And even though we lost, I felt exhilarated. Since then, I haven't seen it. I keep track of it in the paper, whether we won or lost. I heard we had a rough night of it last night.
And that's one of my favorite things about you, is that you will form opinions about teams and games even when you haven't watched them.
Exactly. You've been ripping me for that for years.
I just think it's great.
It's because I'm too busy. I'm also the movie critic, and I have to keep up on all the news, so I'm always watching Fox and MSNBC and all that stuff, and I'm reading the paper and magazines.
So terrible.
I'm too busy to keep track of all the things in sports that I'm interested in.
Okay.
And so I rely on things like, I know you're intimidated by newspapers because you're a radio guy and you think sports writers think they have an edge on you or something. But to me, I still like the written word enough.
Yes.
And I can glean a lot more off the written word.
Watching the game. Yes. I see how, because you just prefer a good literary criticism instead of reading the book. It's fine.
Exactly. When I don't have time to read the classics.
And yet, you still manage to find time to watch what's going on with the Tour de France. I know you do.
Oh, yes. But Tour de France is the perfect sport. I mean, excepting football. Football, I don't care how boring a game is, if their teams are involved. I love the game of football. But the great thing about the Tour de France is it's 25 days of 6 hours of television every day for an entire month, going through the beautiful countryside of France, which I'm a Francophile on top of everything else. And you can turn the TV on at, you know, if you get up early at 5 a.m, or you can watch the rerun at 1 p.m.
Yes.
And you just have
perfect.
It on
yes.
all day while you're doing other things. So you could be, you know, I could be reading the newspaper. I could even be reading the sports pages. I could be, you know, writing a movie review. I could be, you know, there's so many things that I can do during the
Tom,
Tour de France.
We've got
to
go.
It's great.
We've got
to
go.
Oh, no, we don't. No, I got plenty
but
more to
I
say.
I have to go. I have a show with a schedule and things that have to. We will have you on. I could honestly do this every week. I love talking to you.
Right.
One of my great regrets is that you decided to get into news talk instead of sports talk, because I think you would have been fantastic in doing this. So.
The thing is, I would love to do sports talk.
All right,
that's kind of a bucket list thing. The problem is, people would find out right away that I'm full of opinions, but I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to sports.
Well, that may be true in all kinds of ways. Tom, thank you. We appreciate it. We will do this again. Thank you very much.
Okay, see you later, Mike.
There's
bye
Tom
bye.
Tangney. Tom and Curly, every afternoon, 3 to 7 on 97.3 Cairo FM, our sister station. That guy just cracks me up, man.
I've been listening for a long time, and it's hard for my brain to put him into a sports context here because I've listened to that show forever.
Well, and he and Curly are two of the funniest people I've ever met.
It's
honestly,
very, very
in
good.
Very different ways, but two of the funniest people I've ever met and truly greats in this business and in
that's
this
great
industry.
Radio.
Yeah, I love Tom. All right, it is time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
We start giving Tour de France updates of things that you could just have on in the background wherever you're doing. Unbelievable. Pete Carroll says he was so freaking pissed. That's an exact quote. After the first half on Sunday night, and I don't think any Seahawks fan would blame him. His team had not done anything offensively. And worse, I think Pete didn't recognize the style of game that they were playing. Something happened in that locker room to change things in the second half. Good Pete would not give us the details of what he said, but when they returned, it was different. They played a style that you know Pete endorsed. Here's how I see it. I assume Pete tried to be okay with the shift towards passing. He tried to hire a young Turk out of the Rams system. He tried to say in training camp that his system could handle more passing. He tried to talk after week one about being able to adapt and how that could change. But when his team lost a game and then lost their quarterback and then was down 14 points to Pittsburgh, I think he just wasn't able to keep up that charade anymore because Pete believes you need to run to win. And that's what he said yesterday. Quote, there's a lot of people who want to gripe and complain about running the football, but you saw we scored 20 points in the second half. And did it by controlling the football game. That's Pete Carroll football. So where this gets interesting is when Russell Wilson returns, because Pete also said that's how we need to play for the next few weeks and on into the season. So will Russ be okay with that? Will this accelerate whatever issues caused him to mention those four teams that he would consider in a trade last offseason? Or can they win enough here down the stretch to satisfy Russ? The intrigue will continue all throughout the season with an enormous potential for change hanging in the balance. Great Monday night game last night with Tennessee. Coming back from behind late to beat Buffalo, their defense stopped Josh Allen on a fourth down quarterback sneak inside the three. That secured the win. Bills could have just kicked the field goal, played for OT, but instead they opted to go for it. Jeffrey Simmons made a great defensive play to win. Three touchdowns to go with 143 yards for Derrick Henry, who was, as usual, immense. A couple of thoughts. One, running the ball sure seemed to work for Tennessee. I don't hear anybody killing their head coach for being old. And then secondly, tell me who in the Seahawks defense was going to be a war daddy the way Jeffrey Simmons was on that final play. That was a heck of a game and really a great ending and a lot to learn for Seahawks fans, who I think in a lot of ways have tried to model themselves similarly to the Tennessee Titans.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, it was the ugliest game we've seen so far for the Kraken, for sure. They got blown off the ice in Philly. Lose 6-1. First time they truly looked overmatched. Honestly, like an old school expansion team. Like one that didn't have any talent. They just really struggled to get anything going. And Philip Grubauer was making his fourth start in net. That surprised me as well. We'd been led to understand that this was supposed to be a little more of a timeshare with Chris Drieger, but so far, it has been all Grubauer until he got pulled after the fifth goal in the second period. Usually when that happens, that's not entirely the goalie's fault. Some suspect defense certainly appeared to play a role last night. It was also the chippiest game we've seen yet. Some legitimate fights stemming from some players taking exception to liberties. Jamie Oleksiak, a clear winner in his bout. Nathan Bastian on the losing end for sure. Carson Soucy with a lone goal. Right back at it tonight in Jersey. I would certainly expect Chris Drieger to get the start in net, and I think we'll find out here in the next few minutes if that's going to happen. Red Sox hit their third Grand Slam in two games. This time, Kyle Schwarber doing the honors as Boston cruises to a 12-3 win in Game 3. They lead the series 2-1. Game 4 tonight at 5 o'clock, Zach Greinke and Nick Pivetta. Game 3 of the NLCS, Atlanta leads 2-0. That's at 2 o'clock, Walker Buehler and Charlie Morton.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, Nick Rolovich has been terminated for cause by Washington State University after the deadline for state employees to be vaccinated passed, did not get vaccinated, and thus was one of five coaches among the many state employees let go yesterday. Defensive coordinator Jack Dickert will take over as the head coach for now. Athletic director Pat Chun calling it disheartening, but also said their priority would be the health and well-being of the student-athletes. As for a long-term replacement, we'll see, but Bruce Feldman offered some early names, including Jay Norvell, Brent Brennan, Kalen DeBoer and Troy Calhoun. So we will continue to follow that. It's three things you need to know every hour at quarter past the hour.
I hit the wrong button there.
Well, that's all right. I wanted to come back to that Titans game last night. It was a really good football game, wasn't it?
Yeah. Do you agree with the going for it on fourth and inches there?
I don't know. I've really been going back and forth over that.
Does that say you trust your offense more than your defense? I was trying to figure out, yes, reading between the lines here, what does that say from a coaching standpoint? You're just aggressive?
Well, I think some of it is the stupidity of the NFL overtime rule.
Sure.
If you kick the field goal, you go to overtime, and now you risk a 50-50 proposition to never get the ball. That doesn't work for me. And it obviously didn't work for Buffalo. If you go for it, you have a chance to win the game, right?
Yeah.
You might even get into the end zone on that play, or you can get the first down and then try to get into the end zone. I don't know. I think you're down that close. You're trying to win. I don't mind the call.
Yeah, and Sean McDermott, I feel like that was sending a message against the rest of the division. But that game, I don't think they thought they could stop Henry they gave the ball back.
I think he was right.
So,
I don't think they could stop Derrick Henry. I mean, and we've seen the toll that he takes on a team by the fourth quarter. Look what he did to Seattle. That's why I think people kind of just are missing some of the boat on the whole running game thing. When you've got a physical running back, and Alex Collins, by the way, is not that guy. He's just not big enough for it. But when you have Chris Carson and you've got that physical running game, when you had Marshawn Lynch, when they have Derrick Henry, and you can keep pounding on teams over the course of games, those guys tend to get stronger as the games go on.
Yeah.
And by the way, they open up the play action, and you saw what A.J. Brown could do, and you saw what Julio Jones could do late because of the emphasis that you have to place on trying to stop Derrick Henry.
The problem is there's not many Derrick Henrys these days. Running backs get hurt so often, and the fact that they are able to use him as much as they do and he is so durable is really rare.
Well, and that's why I think Pete would tell you, hey, I know you're mad at me because we signed one guy and drafted another guy in the first round, and he thinks you need the depth there, that position is so important to what he's trying to do. You've got to spend some resources at that position. Now, maybe they got it wrong with Rashad Penny. Clearly, at this point, you would say that they have, just based on the injury history. But I think that's the justification for why they went running back in the first round as opposed to another position. They wanted the depth at a position that they think is crucial to helping them win. They're looking for their Derrick Henry, but since there aren't many of them, as Maury, you're absolutely right, just said, well, then you've got to have a rotation that can give you something similar.
Yeah, the rotation is... Well, look at the past, I guess, Procise, McKissick. I'm thinking of all the names that ran through this. Now, Homer, Collins,
yeah, you got
Carson.
a lot of smaller Thomas guys Rawls. That are sort of Rawls. In the third down back role, because I think you're trying to mix them with Chris Carson, right? You're trying to mix them with some, and Penny's a bigger guy, too.
Yeah, he's 220. He's
right.
A big dude.
So I think that's the goal of what you're trying to accomplish, actually getting it to work. You know, that's a different story. And finding those Derrick Henrys. Look, Eddie Lacy and Derrick Henry, I were viewed similarly coming out of college, right? Big backs from Alabama, taking a lot of punishment. And I think because Lacy had worked out in the early going and then kind of gotten too big, and obviously we know what happened to him here, I think there were some questions about whether Derrick Henry would work out. He has. And then some. He's the best running back in the game, and I don't think it's particularly close. We'll talk to Ray Roberts about this. Ray is certainly somebody who knows a lot about the importance of a running game. We'll ask him where the Seahawks are going next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
What's up, Big Ray?
What's up, Big Mike?
How we doing, man?
Hanging in there, brother, you know, early.
Nice to hear your voice here in a beautiful Tuesday morning in Seattle. Ray Roberts joining me here in the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. Ray, let's talk some football, obviously, because Sunday night was our first chance, I think, to really learn about what the Seahawks team would look like and without Russell Wilson, et cetera, once they had a chance to game plan for it. What did you learn watching them on Sunday?
Well, first of all, I think Geno Smith is capable of winning football games with this team if they set him up for success. And the reason I say that is because when you're going to play a team like Pittsburgh, who's a very physical football team, I mean, you just can't start the game fly sweep touch pass to the tight end. Like, that just, to me, that doesn't send the right message. you know, and you have to be willing and, you know, to go match their physicality and let them know that, that you came to play the football game. And I think once they kind of settled into that, mostly in the second half, then Geno Smith had a chance to flourish in the offense.
What did you so what do you think they can win with him? What did you make of sort of that difference between the first and second half? Because Pete was pretty clear that they needed to start running the ball in the second half.
Well, if you look at the stats, it surprised me at halftime that they had only rushed the ball four times for about, you know, 20 yards.
Yeah.
And so Alex Collins was averaging, you know, close to 5 yards a carry. And then when you look at the tape, all four of those runs came in the first quarter. In the second quarter, there were no runs, but then they had, you know, a couple sacks and some incomplete passes and a couple penalties that put them behind the chains. And then you can't run the ball in those situations. And so I think, you know, going in at halftime, someone had to recognize that they were averaging close to 5 yards a carry. And they came out the second half and they went on a, you know, like a 7-8 play drive, threw the ball one time and ran the ball the rest of the time, scored a touchdown, because the running game was there. I don't know why they went away from it. And quite frankly, that's kind of one of my, obviously I love the running game. You know, it's the reason you play the game. Like when you're a kid and you're playing football, whether you're on offense or defense, you didn't play because you were looking at the fourth down analytics of when we should go for it on fourth down and all that. You were playing because you want to smash somebody in the face. Like you want to drive a dude in the ground. Didn't matter what side of the ball you're on. And the running game allows you to do that. And so this offensive line, for the first time too, looked like it was up to the task to run block. And they were doing some really good stuff they hadn't done all year, you know, blocking. And so it's creating lanes to run the ball. And they just got away from it in the second quarter. And so coming back to it, and you know, after halftime, I think Pete saw that the lanes were there to run. I think the offensive lineman probably had something to say. I guarantee you Dwayne Brown said something about running the ball at halftime. And then they came out in the second half and was able to execute their running game schemes.
Was there some creativity to the running game that they brought in the second half there? I mean, were they mixing up the styles and types of runs and being creative with it?
I think the creative part came, there was a couple times where they had like some motion at the snap of the ball. Like one time it was, I think Lockett was, you know, as the ball snapped, he was coming by as if it was a fly sweep. There's a couple of those. And then there was another one where DK was lined up out wide. And when the ball, they were running to the right side, to the offensive right side where DK was lined up. And then he pivoted and came back around behind the quarterback. So just to kind of give the defense something else to think about, maybe slow down just for a split second, allow the centers and the guards to get up to the second level. So those are the types of things that we saw in the very first game that all of a sudden disappeared up until this point again. And so those things have become helpful. If you look around the league, there's a lot of different plays you can run off of all of that same action, and you can get three or four different types of plays out of it. So it puts the defense in conflict, especially the guys on the second level. And sometimes those are the guys that are making the plays when they're reading those zone plays without having to hesitate a little bit. So there was a little creativity in that way, but for the most part up front, it was zone blocking up front. You know, they didn't have a pull with a guard or anything like that. It was, I think it may have been one play where Dwayne Brown pulled. But for the most part, it was just zone blocking, and then it had a little window dressing behind it.
Hmm. Is this a good offensive line so far?
I will say the players are good offensive linemen, but they haven't played as a good offensive line yet. And, you know, I mentioned this, like, I think around week two, just watching the film and just watching their techniques, how some of them are really was rusty with the technique. The meshes, like on the double teams and the run game, wasn't like real sharp. The switching of line stunts in the passing game, the guys on different levels, which makes that really difficult. And a lot of that stuff comes with the timing that it takes to get to know the guy beside you and be able to work together as one unit. But you didn't have the preseason reps. And so now they're trying to work themselves into that space during the season and then also off to a rough start. And so the second half, I thought they did a much better job. That's the best I've seen them look. They have, to me, they have three players that are Pro Bowl caliber players. Now, whether they reach that performance level this year, I don't know. But with Damian Lewis, with Gabe Jackson, and with Dwayne Brown, all three of those dudes, you know, have they can play Pro Bowl caliber football. And so when some people say that you don't have elite talent up there, sure you do. They're just not playing to the level that they're capable of. And I think in the second half of the Pittsburgh game, especially in the running game, they did that.
How about on the other side of the ball, talking to Ray Roberts, and not that you can only talk about the things that happen in the trenches, but it's just always, I love your perspective, and I always learn something from you whenever we talk about what's going on in there, because, you know, for a casual football fan, it can be hard to figure out. What about this defensive line? I mean, you know, Mark Schlereth was on a week or two ago with the afternoon show and said, hey, you know, they don't have a war daddy. They don't have somebody that you've got to really prepare for who you have to know where he is at all times. As an offensive lineman, how would you feel going against this defensive line?
I would agree with Mark 100%. Like, you know, there's teams that you play. You know, so let's take the Pittsburgh Steelers, for instance. You know,
TJ. TJ Watt.
TJ Watt.
Yep.
Yeah. You 1,000%. Like, when you break the huddle, even if you're the left tackle, you're going like, where is that dude? You know what I'm saying? Like, we need to know where that guy is. And so Pittsburgh does a good job of putting him all over the place. Sometimes he stands up and just walks around, and then he has a place where he's rushing the quarterback, whether it's over the guard. You know, he knocked down at least one of the passes by doing that. He was just kind of playing behind everybody, standing up and reading the quarterback, and then jumped up and knocked the ball down. And so he's the type of dude where you have to go, where is that guy? Like, I remember being a rookie with the Seahawks when we played the Philadelphia Eagles. I promise you, I had my eye on Reggie White every single time I broke the huddle. Because I'm just like, where is that dude, and is he going to come over here? Luckily, he never came, so I was excited. But yeah, the Seahawks don't have that guy, you know, and like, coming into the season, you know, Puna Ford, you know, was kind of billed as, you know, the kind of meat eater there in the middle, but Puna Ford hasn't quite shown up this year. He may be doing some dirty work that may be allowing some other guys to make plays, but that's not what you're expecting out of Puna Ford. You thought he was going to be a playmaker. And quite honestly, like, he's big in that he's a big, shorter dude. But he's not a guy where you go like, man, we got to make sure we double team this dude, or we have to, you know, you better make sure you get extra preparation for this guy. He can embarrass you, overpower you, you know, outquick you, all those kinds of things. Like, that's not happening. But you do have a bunch of just workmanlike players in there. But you do need somebody that can start to separate themselves to become a real problem. But I don't know who that person will be.
It's good stuff. Ray, thank you. Miss talking to you. Hopefully we can do this some more, because I love hearing your voice. And let's chat again.
Yes, sir. Anytime.
All right. There you go. There's Ray Roberts, Big Ray, one of my favorites, former left tackle, of course, here in Seattle. And you can hear him on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show during game days. All right. Coming up, before we talk to John, we are going to announce the show's Seahawks code word for the day. It's your chance to win a couple of tickets to see the Seahawks host the Saints Monday Night Football primetime event. You can be there when former Seahawks quarterback Matt Hasselbeck is inducted into the Ring of Honor at halftime. Tickets still available at Seahawks.com/tickets. So we'll do that coming up in a few minutes. We will also talk to John Clayton. Huge upset in the NFL last night. And man, the Seahawks had to be taking notes. That and a whole lot more next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton's Morning Drive, every morning at 8:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
I thought you saw a lot of good things out of offense. I think that was a very positive sign.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Brought to you by Dubin Law Group.
It just amazes me. I give it credence, but not total credence.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Mike Salk.
Good morning, John.
I don't know if it's good morning.
No?
Well, my CenturyLink wireless is struggling right now. So I have no wireless pretty much in the house.
Okay.
And so it's like I have to send my AP vote in, send out my Washington Post column, send in a Denver story. It's like it's a disaster.
You think you're cursed? Do you think there's some sort of a curse upon your house or something with all the technology issues?
I don't know.
It's like, and it's all the companies. I mean, it's equal opportunity.
I know. I mean, it's like I've lost 12 years with DirecTV, everything that I taped for 12 years. Now I'm having trouble with the internet on CenturyLink. It's like...
You know what you need, John? I've been thinking about you, actually. You know what you need?
What?
You need to hire a kid. You need to hire like a young person, like somebody who's like a teenager. to come over and just help you with all the to prepare you for all these things. Because you and I mean, I'm now at the point where I need my kids to do all that stuff for me.
Right, right.
You just need to hire a kid to come over and help.
Yeah, whatever. It's like, but things aren't working right now.
Mm. All right. Well, let's talk some football. Maybe that'll maybe that'll put us in a better mood. Hell of a game last night. I know you enjoyed watching that and the way the whole thing came to an end. What'd you make of the decision to go for it on fourth down rather than kick the field goal?
I thought it was stupid. I didn't like it. I mean, too many of these coaches think, let's go for the fourth down. Let's go for this. Let's go for this. It's like, and again, take the safe bet. Because if you don't make the play, you lose the game. They didn't make the play, so they lose the game. Is that the right thing to do? I mean, overtime may be a pain, but overtime is there, and they had the opportunity to go into overtime, and they didn't do it. And so now, I mean, I don't know if this is going to come back and cost them when they start doing the seedings and all these different things, but it can. Mm. I thought it was a bad decision.
Yeah. Is Jared Goff going to get benched?
No, no. There's nobody else to replace him. So it's like, it's like I know that Dan Campbell, who likes to bite off kneecaps and things like that, wants to make changes. He's going to make changes. But, you know, I don't see them benching Jared Goff.
No. All right. What about Whitney Mercilus? He was released, right? Or about to be released by the Texans. He's got a couple of three sacks this year?
Yeah.
Obviously, the Seahawks and Pete has said they can use more help trying to rush the passer. Could he be a fit?
I doubt it. I mean, because, again, he's more of a 3-4 linebacker because he's been in the 3-4 for the longest time. And then when you really look at it, what they did on Sunday, which was a major change, is that they use a lot more 7 defensive backs. And so by using 7 defensive backs and getting Ryan Neal on the field for 15 plays, they only had Cody Barton, the third linebacker, who's the outside strong side linebacker starter, out there for 2 plays. And so it's like, so where's Mercilus going to fit in? Because, I mean, you have, the play of Jordan Brooks and Bobby Wagner. They're the two linebackers. But when you put the 7 defensive backs out there, basically what you're doing is that you're kind of using Jamal Adams as a quasi-linebacker.
Looks like Jimmy Garoppolo was back at practice. Trey Lance missed practice. So what's the latest on the San Francisco quarterback situation?
Yeah, and I guess the way he threw yesterday, looks like he should be back. I mean, he's missed one game, which, of course, is kind of unusual because he's missed so many games through the years. I mean, what is it? It's like two-thirds of the games that he's been on the 49er roster he's missed. So, but it does look like he should be back. But again, that team is so injured. They have so many injuries and so many more they're probably going to get.
Yeah, and it seems like it is just, again, sort of like your technology things. Like it just, in one place, it seems one thing begets the next, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just like you start with an injury and then it's 2 more and then it's 3 more. It's amazing how it's happened there. In the meantime, it sounds like great news here in Seattle for Daryl Taylor. Pete said he may even be able to go on Monday night.
Which I'm just stunned. Now, again, I mean, you can see the teams are being extra cautious with their players. I mean, you know, the hospital in Pittsburgh is just across the street from the stadium. So it's like not only were they able to get him over to the hospital to get checked out, but they had enough time to be able to get him out to the airport, which is a little bit of a drive, to get him to fly back. But I think that's encouraging. And then, of course, I mean, it looked like it was supposed to be a neck injury. And now yesterday, Pete said it wasn't a neck. So, yeah, I don't know if he is going to be able to play, but he has a chance to play.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Pete also saying yesterday, so we talked a little bit about it because yesterday morning, Pete told me that they had reached out to Cam and had that conversation with Cam Newton. Yesterday afternoon, he not only doubled down, but said they'd had a couple of conversations with Cam Newton. What does that tell you?
It still tells me that they probably prefer Blake Bortles over Cam Newton because he's probably a better fit in the offense. But again, it's like anything else. You know, you want to try to, you know, talk, and, you know, they're always going to be involved with John Snyder in every type of deal that's possible. But I still think in the end that, I just don't see Cam being a fit. He's not as accurate. I mean, sure, he's a running quarterback. He's got great talent, but he's also in his 30s and starting to show it. And so is that a good fit? Mm. And right now, you know, Geno Smith is the quarterback. And if you bring Cam in, then it's going to be a threat to Geno Smith.
Yeah, and I don't know how, I wouldn't say Pete exactly gave him ringing endorsements on that. I mean, this was Pete. Here's the whole quote on Cam.
Well, we're doing everything we can with everybody that's available always. And so I talked to him a couple times, you know, and just trying to see what was going on in his world and all that. And we're wide open and continuing to compete with that. And, you know, there was nothing to be done then. And, you know, we're really counting on Geno to do the job. And that's how the conversation went with him, too. We were counting on Geno to do the job and all that. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't know what's going to happen there.
There's a lot of we'll see what happens. Yeah. I mean, counting on Geno, but faith in Geno?
I think there's faith in Geno. I mean, you can see that he got the comeback on Sunday. I mean, were it not for the fumble, I mean, they had a chance to win that game.
No, but Pete was pretty upset with the fumble. I mean, said specifically it was a ball security issue, fluke thing.
Yeah, but that was one mistake. Well, it was a bad mistake, and it cost him a game. But no, I think Pete stays by Geno.
All right, good stuff. John, I'm sorry again about what's going on the tech front. My advice again, hire just a kid.
Yeah.
Find a high school kid in your neighborhood and hire him or her to come over and just deal with all of your tech issues. It sounds like it'll make your life better. That's my advice.
Okay.
All right. There we go. John, we'll talk tomorrow.
Hi.
John Clayton. Every day at 8:45. I forget. John the tech issues are like they're starting to add up, right? It's like one on top of another on top of another. Just needs a kid. Get a kid around to do that stuff. They're great at that.
That's when I go home for Christmas. It's like, oh, well, let's say hi to everybody and then fix everyone's electronics for the next 4 days.
Heather has to give her phone to Cecily. Cecily's 7 years old. She's like, oh, just do this, this, and that. You're like, what? How do you even know how to use this thing? I mean, it's not a John thing. You just need to get a kid. They're great at that stuff. All right. Jay Keeps is going to come in here next. Plus, we're going to give away these tickets when Jay comes in. Jake, I'm going to guess, feels a little bit differently from me and maybe even a little differently from Ray Roberts as it comes to Pete Carroll's thoughts on running the ball. So I am always looking forward to a good conversation with Mr. Heaps. We will do it together next. Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.